Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Good morning, fellas.
Hi there.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Fine. It's a good Thursday.
Yeah, it is
a good Thursday. My favorite day of the week.
Really?
Is it?
Yeah. Because it's anticipating Friday's coming. Yeah, yeah.
It's anticipating the climax.
Yeah. Because it's like it's essentially the weekend started. You know, like you're like Friday's right there. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our video store. Today is our guest episode. So on Thursdays, we have some of our interesting customers come in and we chat through their careers and the films that they've loved. Today on the show, we have the guys behind Duis Wine, which has been a lovely sponsor of the show, an incredible wine company.
Of course.
Of course, at the core of it is this hilarious joke that it's Duis Wine.
Yeah.
But they have done so much with their lives. They're filmmakers. Commercial makers, they're writers, they're actors. This is Brian and Asha, Brian Funnykirk and Asha Skoltz. For those who know them, this is a good chance for you to see, you know, how everything has sort of come to be and the films that they've loved. For those who don't know them, you should really give this a go because they are just funny, amazing, very talented guys. Okay, before we get too into this, guys, I just want to make a quick announcement. For everyone that's browsing the aisles, I'm just going to press this little button over here.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that the 45th Durban International Film Festival is coming. It's presented by the Center for the Creative Arts at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and it'll take place from the 18th to the 28th of July. It is the oldest and the largest film festival in Southern Africa, presenting over 100 screenings, all of which are premieres in this region. And it's going to be over a bunch of different venues. There's Suncoast Cine Centre, New Metro Pavilion, and the Stir Kennicle and Gateway. Tickets are 80 Rand, and they can be purchased through each cinema's website.
We are then also going to do something with the Bioscope later. But yeah, funny that you say Thursday's your favourite day. I've got a buddy that's also like, I love Fridays because of the possibility of what could come. Where I'm like, no, I like a Sunday.
Yeah,
you
Sunday
know, just
is
a,
like a
just a lazy end to the weekend.
3 o'clock on Sunday is the worst time of the week, though, because you're like.
But that's why you have
tomorrow.
A Sunday nap.
Oh, that's my favorite time because that's when you get to be like doing nothing.
Yeah, but
ideally.
3 o'clock, you're like, oh, Monday's coming, and then you hear the Carte Blanche theme song, and you're like,
Scott,
yeah, you're like, please no.
Oh, yeah. Do you still watch Carte Blanche?
No, I don't.
Do anyone of us like what are they gonna do, bro? No one's gonna watch Cop Blotch anymore.
As long as they're putting stuff out into
it's becoming a YouTube channel.
Exactly. But all right, I think let's get into it.
Okay.
Are you guys
cool.
Got something that's gonna keep you busy?
Yeah, I've got a box of Duis Wine in the storeroom.
You stole my duty. I'll watch
we can
Cold
share
Duet.
It and we can watch that weird movie you spoke about this week.
Okay, fine.
Cool.
Okay, lovely. All right, you guys are gonna go drink on the job while I work.
What's the point of being sponsored by a wine company? Go and drink on the job, bro.
All right, this is Brian and Asha popping in to rent something. How's it?
Hello, Russell.
How are you?
Fine and self?
Oh, lekker, man.
Yes, it's nice to see you.
It is lovely to have you guys. It's a real treat.
The treat is all ours.
I think of you guys often whenever we are peddling our Duis here at the Bioscope.
Appreciate you doing that peddling for us.
Thank you, man.
On our behalf.
I think we must just get into it because you guys, for me, let me maybe start by saying we went to varsity together.
Correct.
You guys were about, I think you were just 1 year above me, but I did some classes with you guys.
Well, how old are you now?
I'm at that age, right?
That age, yeah.
I was like, I'm turning 38, right? And someone was like, no, no, bud, we're turning, you know, we're turning 39 this year. Next year's the 40th.
Hey, I just had mine.
Okay.
Big 4-0.
Big 4-0.
Yeah.
How was it?
Yeah. No, lekker.
You happy, eh?
Yes, it's lekker. It's like being 20, but with money.
But we were, yeah, we were at varsity. I did some classes, I think, with you guys because I came in with doing a normal BA, but I chose that one subject, FEPA.
Yeah, yeah.
I was with you guys on that, and then I realized I want to be in the theater. Mm. So then I was like a year behind as I then did my BA DA.
Yes.
I did a similar thing, actually.
Yeah.
Because I started with the kind of pre-law stuff. Then I saw Brian, you know, drinking coffee at the theater.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a vibe, you know.
Remember how much time we had?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to
we would talk shit for hours sort of first year, second year theater.
Well, I had a thought the other day. I was like, if you could go back to that person, that time when you had time, what would you do with that, like knowing what you know now and how little time you have, what would you do with that time? What would you tell yourself to do with that time?
What do you think you would, what do you think you'd tell that person?
I like to think that I would try and tell myself to exercise more. That was the thing. I used to drink a lot. And I'd also, you know what, the other one was that I would engage with learning about music more than, because, you know, we played music.
Yes.
And you did the band thing and all that, but didn't learn my instrument, you know? So it's just was stuck with, I can do a pentatonic scale and like smash out some power chords, you know? And I wish I'd actually learned.
Yeah, to put in the hours, the 10,000 hours.
Well, that's it, because you had the time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
So like, yeah.
But anyways, you guys, for me, you guys were so the people that whatever you did well.
Well, thank you.
No, and I always admired the work that you guys did. And I like kind of looked up to you in a way in varsity. Like you were one of the people that like when you were in plays, like I remember, I think you were both in Clockwork Orange, eh?
Yeah.
That one production. I just remember like really loving that and always thinking that what you guys did was good.
Oh.
And when you then, after varsity, went on to start the production company, right?
Yeah.
It was just so great to see you thrive.
Well, thank you.
And at one point, we even shot an ad at the Bioscope. Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
What was that ad for? It was like Monte Cassino.
That was like one of our first ads that we, because we kind of were, you know, we just kind of decided one day to tell people that we can make ads.
Yeah.
And we didn't really know how to do that.
Because you guys weren't at film school. Went on to do what you could be the most sort of film school at Wits.
Yeah.
But you guys were doing the drama, right?
Yeah. We were performers first. We did acting and kind of, we also wrote and directed as well in that side. And then I think it was from the acting that we kind of went, hey, like let's create our own stuff. Let's make our own things. And from there, we just kind of said, let's tell people that we can make ads.
Yeah.
Act like you can make ads.
Like, let's act.
Yeah, because we acted in ads, and then we noticed how poorly the production companies were acting at making ads. We can act at making ads better than they can act at making ads.
Yeah. You could act as anyone.
As anything.
That's
it. Yeah.
That's the trick. That's the trick.
We're an acting production house. Acting directors.
And I think, we started in 2008. I remember it was about 5 years ago, that I was like, yeah, I think I know what I'm doing.
Okay.
Like, I think I kind of, you know, I'm still learning, but I think I don't have to busk it as much any longer. I think I actually got a sense of what's going on.
And Team Best was the name of the production company. Is that still a big part of your lives?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very big
part of my lives. Is that still like the main chunk?
Yeah. I'd say so. We spend most of our time making ads.
Yeah.
No longer acting like we're making ads and just making them.
How did the wine come in? How did Duos start?
Well, it was Brian was talking to a wine person. We all like wine a lot. We drink a lot of wine. Not as much as we used to, actually, which is really good. It's been a good shift for us. So we're much more specific and selective, and we taste it now instead of just
smashing it down.
Yeah. You know, it's so that's good. That's a good point to make. But we've always been engaged in kind of like food and drink, and wine's been a big part of kind of what we've done. And there was, you know, Brian had often floated, as he does regularly, kind of harebrained ideas around.
This is it strikes me as like a lovely middle of the night braai idea. Like the name and like the concept.
Well, most mornings Brian goes, "Can I quickly tell you about this?" He's like, "So we're busy trying to write a movie," and Brian goes, "I've got our movie." And I go, "What happened?" He goes, "Or it'll say, did you dream it?" He goes, "Oh, I dreamt it." So this is the madness that comes out of Brian. But the reality is, Brian had been messing around with like a thought, you know, around this for a little bit, and then he encountered a winemaker friend, colleague. At a wedding, right?
I just saw it at...
You saw her somewhere. It was somewhere.
Babylon's Turin. I was just arbing around there and saw her there.
Swanning, acting like he has the money to be a Babylon's Turin.
Yeah, exactly.
that performance quality coming back
just
in.
And then the hoi polloi.
And then it kind of gone, you know, she was talking about the wine that she was making and that she had a little bit extra. And then it was this kind of thing of, well, we had this idea. I've got this idea to, you know, put in a box. And it's interesting because initially there was no idea that the box was even a thing. It was kind of like, well, you can put anything in the box, right? You could put good wine in the box. But we didn't know that the box itself actually was a whole movement in itself. You know, it's a whole, you know, all the ramifications around the economics and feasibilities and environmentalism. But really it was How do we get more lacquer wine for ourselves to drink and then make it kind of charming and put it in a box?
It was one of those we had this idea and then happened upon this person and then we were like, "Do you have wine?" And she's like, "Yeah, got this amount left. I mean, extra lying around." And she's a very sort of high end winemaker and we're like, "Can we buy it and put it in a box?" And she's like, "Okay." And then just like a couple of months later, we had wine in boxes suddenly, and then the name.
Did the name come after that then?
Yeah. So the name was always like a joke, right? It was kind of like a ha ha. We call it a box wine duis. Ha ha. Duis is a funny word. And then when it actually came to naming the wine, we were actually quite reticent to use the name.
Yeah, sure. It's one of those like it's a great idea, but it could backfire. Yeah.
And also we didn't want it to be like to feel cheap. You know, like we didn't want it to be like we call it wine duis.
But remember at the time as well. It wasn't a business proposition at the first stage. So even though kind of later on when we were kind of formalizing it a little bit more, you know, like booking domains on the internet, which you know, it feels like you're kind of concretizing and putting things a little bit in stone. Mm. But at the time, it wasn't a lot of wine that we had got initially. And it was very exciting to be able to kind of almost white label and put a sticker on this thing. And then we were selling it to friends and family out the back of our... We were literally delivering it to like mates and going, "Hey, we've got this," pretending again, acting to be wine merchants.
This wasn't a COVID thing, eh? This is past COVID prohibition.
It was post.
Because I did a little bit of that, selling to my mates outside of my car because I had the stock, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And it was so funny when I sent a list of all the Bioscope stock, and then they made a donation to the Bioscope.
Yes.
So it wasn't, all above board. When I said,
"Who's listening to this thing?"
The police.
Are the feds?
The absolute police.
But what was so funny is like when I sent a list and I said, "I've got this much Cab Sav, I've got this much Sauvignon Blanc," the one kid in the group was like, "Which one's white? Which one's red?" If you have to ask that question, you're not ready for the stock.
Exactly. This is not for you.
The wine is not for you.
Yeah.
But wine is really confusing, and I know that's kind of a joke about going, "Oh, which is white and which is red," but one of the things we've learned is it's a funny industry where people think they know a lot about, and there's a lot of like information, right, and there's a lot of like words that float around, and everyone's got kind of an opinion, but most people don't know anything, even like the really clever wine people. Yeah. It's like, honestly, Raz, like you can go, you know, yeah. Oh, it's, I mean, what are we talking about here? It's berries and you know, yeah. granite and this, you know, and what is it? And then I'll sit with people and they'll swirl the wine and sip it and do the mukbang or whatever you call it, ASMR kind of, you know, yeah, into yeah. the microphone. Brian's got to close his ears. But, yeah. and then they'll go, oh, is it a Cab Sav? Is it a, oh, but maybe it's a Cab Franc. And most people don't know,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
and it's hard and it's confusing and that's done on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I've realized that. That's like a mid to late 30s realization where yeah. you're like, oh, the personal trainer will make fitness seem complicated
Correct.
So that you pay them
yes.
to decode Correct. This.
Yeah, 100%. Correct.
And a lot of the film industry, most industries shroud themselves in this mystery 100%. So that you feel like, oh, I've got to go do masterclasses.
Yes.
There was a great study that someone once told me where they formulated four different beers. There was like the working man's beer, there was this sort of sophisticated whatever man's beer, and advertised them in this big room, and guys came in and they had to say which kind of person they were. This is like a big American study done on the thousands.
Professional, hey, from America.
And it eventually came down to them saying, okay, well, they've got to decide which beer they love the most of these lagers, commercial lagers. And the Oaks were adamant, I'm a that guy. I love that beer.
Mm.
Turns out, all the same fucking beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
all in
yeah.
your head.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But I mean, there are some differences, obviously,
yeah.
sweet, sours,
yeah,
and stuff. But
there are differences. There are differences. But the again, it's such like, it's so subjective and it's so taste-driven. And a big thing for us that recently that we've encountered is, because obviously, I mean, our catch line has been proper wine in a box.
Yeah.
And a question that we go, it's like, how do you know it's proper? You know, and
yeah.
people will taste it and they go, oh, it's got a long mid palate and it finishes like this. It's like, I can give you a long mid palate with a bit of sugar. Like, honestly, you can, and they do. And the winemakers put in supplements and they put in all sorts of other things, you know, yeah. that build out flavor. We always talk about the cheaper stuff as being a bit like Peloni. So yeah. it's like bulk stuff that goes in, they mix it around, they put a few additives, like flavor enhancers, color enhancers, all that kind of stuff. But it's actually like, how do you start determining what quality is? What does that yeah. mean? Does that mean it has to be stomped by feet? Does that mean it has to be yeah. natural wine? Like, how do you determine which grape vine is of higher quality because it's 50 years old or 30 years old, you know?
This kind of really prominent winemaker who we've been working with, and he's kind of been mentoring us quite a bit over the last while. He says it perfectly. He's like, it's all grapes. He's like, it's all grapes.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, and that's where, and what we've found is even the wine industry starts to believe its own hype in a way, right?
Yeah.
And because you have to. It's like the art industry. It's a very similar industry in that
yeah.
these things are inflated by desire or by awards or by this kind of, or brand, right? And so we've kind of gone, but we've got access to amazing wine. And we can make it accessible to everyday people. And that's where, like, so some people moan that our wine's expensive. I mean, like, $350 for...
it's not that expensive,
For four bottles of wine.
Yeah.
But the wine you're getting is worth $300 a bottle. You know, like, like according to the wine industry.
Market value.
Market value. In the industry.
Yeah, sure.
And we've got to a point where we're like, we can't believe how weird the wine industry is. That I said to Ash, I was like, can we just put Witblits in a box because no one goes, where's this Witblits
from?
Where's
it from? Who
like,
made
what,
it?
What kind of thing? It's like all of a sudden when it becomes wine, then everyone gets really like snippy about it, you know? And and people go, who's the winemaker? No one asks who made the beer.
Yeah.
No one asks who makes the Witblits. Everyone just goes, that's a lekker thing. I'm going to buy it and drink it.
But like, never mind Witblits and beer. It's like we look at things that are really expensive that people don't ask questions about. And we always use the example of, Russ, you're going to buy a car, right?
Yeah.
Cars are lank expensive now. Let's say you want a German car. Those are very, very expensive. And you go there and you're like, there's an Audi. Are we allowed to say Audi? Are we allowed to say brands?
I don't know.
Yeah,
probably not.
Of course.
There's an Audi, right? So most people go, there's an Audi. And now this car's R1 million. Okay. And people go, I like what it looks like. I'll buy it.
Yeah.
What's the engine? I think it's a 2 liter. Yeah. Nobody's going like, who made the engine? Where did the metal come from for the engine?
Yeah,
well, like, was the metal mined sustainably? Like, nobody questions any. You're paying R1 million. Now people are going to go, okay, so you're paying R80 a bottle, technically, which is in a box now. So it's four bottles to a box, but you're paying $350 for this. And the questions you get are like, it's kind of, when you're going to marry someone and the father-in-law quizzes what your 40-year plan is. You know, yeah, it's like, sure, it's, do but, that. And you go, but what's, and then you could say, where are you going to drink your wine? No, I'm just having a braai. It's yeah. $350, you know, and it's bananas that there's even this like conceit that you shouldn't understand it.
I think it's probably just from an outsider's perspective, it's probably because one, it's just so radically different sure. from what anyone's encountered before. And I can feel the exact same thing in the Bioscope
yes.
where someone walks in and over the course of 5 minutes, I have to carve out a room in their brain about how an independent cinema works. And these are smart people.
Sure.
Yes. Like, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're smart people. But like every now and again, someone would go, and how do I see what's showing? And I'm like, a website,
yeah.
A program,
the internet,
a mailing list, social media, talking to me, looking around.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't complicated. But then I realize what I am doing is so radically different from the mainstream, where it's like I walk into Pick and Pay Liquor, I buy the wine that I've always bought. And also the other thing is perhaps the bottle or the packaging is, you know, explains something or gives information. But I think it's so lovely that you guys have come in from this radical outside place with ideas, creativity. I think the fact that you guys can make your own ads is great.
Oh, we love it.
And I think that's been one of the biggest drivers. I love the fact that now there's billboards and I'm seeing you guys like, you know, that's another level of legitimacy, especially when it comes to certain brands. Like, you want to be on billboards. And I've noticed the difference. So when you guys started, I remember someone giving me a nugget, which is, when I started Limited Edition, it was just an online thing, and someone said, oh yeah, and you've got the Bioscope, so people can collect the stuff for free here. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't think about that. You know, if you want to save on shipping. So when I saw you guys do it, my first thought was, hey, we can dedicate a corner of this Bioscope to stock your stuff, and people can come and collect it. We don't make any money. But whenever someone comes in, I'm just like, if you're cool enough to buy this wine, perhaps you're cool enough to know about the cinema. Do you know about it? It's 50-50. And
well, and it's, if you're cool enough to know about the cinema, and well, because what we always say, it's like you are making a connection between, we do have this synergy in with our brands, where we like people that want to do something a little different, but who want quality in a small contained way, and like,
you know, they're very similar.
But they are as well, because now to the point we were chatting about, kind of when I saw you last, you were saying it's so nice that you can get some more mainstream stuff that you can play in the cinema.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's wonderful. And so for us as well, we've kind of been on this journey where initially when we started with the wine, we were intent on it just being very small batch, kind of unique varietals.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, but then you kind of go, actually, that's not even the stuff I want to drink all the time.
Yeah.
And it's too kind of myopic to engage with more people in a way that makes a difference. And the reality is independent niche markets still have to have a market and they still have to grow. And so one of the things you speak about billboards, and we're kind of moving in a space now where we're starting to learn a little bit more about what a broader spectrum public likes to drink.
Yeah.
Not just one or two individuals who have, you know, kind of a really highfalutin understanding of what the wine industry is. And and that's very important for us.
That's the same as the cinephiles.
Exactly.
You know, and the Bioscope must be a place for that. But oh my God, I will not rest my whole business on cinephiles, because 100%. They know more than you.
Yes,
and they'll always know more than you.
Exactly.
Like, no matter how much I've watched, there's always someone that's watched a more obscure film.
We were talking about some of these films. You had sent us a thing saying, you know, what we're going to chat about. And we were going through, you know, some of the films on our list. And even coming through kind of drama school and having to do FEPA, you know, we've got Kurosawa in our back pocket. That's fine. You know, Seven Samurai is like, it's a real cracker. But the reality is we're saying, are people going to judge us if we say our favorite film is Maverick? You know, like, is Maverick, because I absolutely love Maverick the same way that one out of five South Africans drinks Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
That's what they drink, you know? Yeah. And it's like, that's what we drink.
Yeah.
We like it, and it's lekker, and it's very nice to have a Sauvignon Blanc in the afternoon when it's hot and sunny and you've got a vongole pasta in front of you. I don't know.
In my head, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Sauvignon Blanc.
There's nothing wrong with Sauvignon Blanc, but same reason, but it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And just because it's popular doesn't make it any less worthy. And that's why I think when we look at a massive Bruckheimer, it's so lekker to watch.
No,
and this comes down to this question again of what is quality?
Yeah.
What is it? How do you determine that? You know?
No, and I think it just it constantly changes. It's always up to just you in that moment, you in that wine. If you love it, it's the same as you in this film. If it's correct. A big budget Hollywood spectacle of 200 million, but if they nailed it, fucking that's all 100%. That counts.
And again, it's if it's lucky for you, then it's lucky. Like it's like your it's all your experience, right? It's all like your sort of. I find that with wines, it's so much of it is about the story, and so much of it is you go there's this really cool restaurant in Paternoster where the wine the owner of the restaurant the chef will come and talk to you about the wine, and always it's like, oh, this wine comes from this weird crop on the outskirts of, but like not in a pretentious way,
just in an interesting way.
And he goes like, there's this crop that's like on the sea, and you can kind of taste the, or smell the salt, the salt, the sea salt, and then you smell it and you're like, oh yeah, I think I can. And maybe that's just because he told you that you can.
Yeah.
But I love these like little stories about, and actually we're investigating telling these stories, because what we've kind of found is when we entered the wine market, people were very they closed ranks. And the wine industry was like, well, we don't like this. And the Joburg and you know, like, we don't know who these people are. But we want to go, and the same as we do with, in the production side, we're like, hey, guys, we're a team. And if you're succeeding, we're succeeding.
Because you could take the extras of almost anyone, right?
We can, exactly. And we want to help build the industry. So we kind of are going, how do we, let's go shine a light using our production ability on small wineries or on like interesting farms or interesting people that are out there. Like, how do we as Duis go, hey guys, we're all in a team and you're a cool winery, and whether we're buying your wine or not, we don't care. Like, we just want to make you look lekker, because
that's a nice added give back. I went to I stayed at this sort of lodge for the weekend, and I just loved this woman who handed us the food. And she just said, here's your lovely steak.
That's
or
great.
Here's your yummy soup.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's interesting. That's what's happening? And she's like, no, it was advice that someone once gave her, which is just give one adjective as you hand the food. So immediately in your brain, you go, this is going to be yummy.
Yeah.
Like, well, it just makes the steak yummier.
We've got this. That's why.
Enjoy your meal.
We said we were the only wine that says, it's proper wine. Like, we're the only wine that's out there going, this is good, guys.
This is actually good.
That's true.
Proper wine. It's just in a box. Yeah. And we're like, no one else is going, delicious Cabernet. You know?
It's like, Cabernet. That's a delicious Cabernet. It's a very funny
thing. Speaking of tasty liquids that you two were involved in, you guys were the face of Fanta for like... Sure. And that was like a year or two, eh?
Yeah, it was a time, eh? 2005.
I want to touch on some of the things that you guys have done, because I think, you know, what I love about ad campaigns, and of course, as you said, you were the stars of ads and you were acting in them, and then you went behind the camera. But I just love this idea that in South Africa, you can be like a household name for like a month. You're like, you're the dude. You're the person that everyone is fucking seeing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, life obviously carries on.
Yeah.
But you two were the dudes of those Fanta ads.
The Fanta guys, yeah.
And Ash, you were the single ladies guy.
Yes, yeah. Me and Beyonce go way back.
Yeah.
Way back 2009.
Was that, when you think of that, Ash, specifically that single ladies campaign, what is that to you? Is that just, what was that like?
I mean... It was very cool.
Yeah.
Like, it was very lacquer, you know, and it's funny because there is a sense of like this weird little bizarre celebrity kind of stuff that happens from those things.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of photographs I've had with tellers at Woolworths has been amazing.
Yeah.
Because of that. But
you shop at Woolworths.
Because I shop at Woolworths.
Shout out to Woolworths.
Shout out, yeah. I dig a cookie dough.
But vibes.
But yeah, like it is a kind of a funny thing.
But I mean that could have paid for Varsity, or like, I mean, that was I'm sure a big payday.
So it's quite interesting, like locally you don't get that much for local ads. But but the ads that we've both been in that you don't see because they're flattered in Germany or Europe or wherever.
Oh, really?
Like, those are the ones that kind of
Sparkasse.
Yeah, exactly. And they overdub you with these like amazing German voiceovers, yeah. And it's very bizarre.
What was that brand?
So I did a Sparkasse one.
What is that?
It's a bank.
Yeah.
And I remember I was my wife. I think she was my partner in that ad. I had a nice, like very like light blue jersey on. I was playing like the dad. And the room kept getting smaller and smaller.
That was the concept.
Like the Star Wars compactor. I think it's even called Sparkasse Star Wars compactor. If you search that, you'll find it. And it's like the room gets smaller and smaller as she talks about, oh, you know, like life and, you know, everything's so expensive. And your debts or something.
Yeah,
we got a dog called Brutus. I remember Brutus was going to, like this massive bull mastiff that was going to like move in with us. And Ash did a chip.
Yeah, man. Chips, funny fish. Did you have to learn the German? No, because you just say it and then they overdub you, which is amazing. Okay. So that when you watch it back, and it feels quite legitimate. Mm. But those are... Listen,
okay, those were the big ones.
Those are the big ones, and no one ever gets to see it. But we were joking the other day, you know, we shot an ad for Lunch Bar. And at the office, there were just boxes and boxes of Lunch Bars.
Yeah.
And we're like, it's the first time that childhood dream came true of, you know, you always see people on it. You're like, do you think they got a lifetime supply of Lunch Bar? You know, we always joke.
It's such a kid thought.
When you do Fanta, it's like, oh, we're going to get Fanta for a year. Is that what's going to happen? They're like, no, here's like a few hundred rand and we're going to play your ad. And you know what, guys? Isn't it great that everyone recognizes you? And we're like, it is so great. Meanwhile, no, it's not paying for Varsity.
Just for context, I mean, it's funny you talk about it because it's like there's so much that we've taken for granted in our careers where you audition for a Fanta ad and you're in the Fanta ads and it's cool that you got it and it's a nice thing and got a bit of money and you act in these things and you get a bit of clout, you know, when you...
It helps you get the next ones.
Helps you get the next ones.
I mean, oaks quiver when you walk into audition. Knowing that you've done the Fanta ad.
You're the Fanta guys.
You're the Fanta. Obviously, you guys are going to get this next one.
You booked it.
KFC.
And we did do a bunch of other ads together. We got cast together. And we were always up against each other. I think I was the next guy for all the single ladies.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, but obviously he's a better dancer.
Yeah. Naturally.
There's like a physique thing at the time. I was like, I was a bit more mature at that stage than Brian was physically.
And continue to be mature physically. It's the hair.
Well, I just can't wait till I'm the silverback. I always say I want to be the guy on the beach in Plett when I'm 60.
Yeah.
That when the little kids are playing, they go, there's your grandpa. You know, like I know that. Because you're just like, you're alpha. And it's like, you got
that. They can recognize you from your back.
They can recognize you and you know, like, and you got that little speedo and you got the, you can't even tan anymore just because you're just that color of the beach now. I mean, these are goals. Like life goals.
That is a good one.
And I always used to judge those guys and I just want to be that so bad
in
now.
A speedo, yeah.
In a speedo, doing the not, like, don't care. Don't care about any of this anymore.
That's lovely.
But there is, like, you know, we live in a world where we're so used to, I guess, working with kind of celebrities or
desensitized. And
it's like, so we don't think of it as, and so you say it and you go like, oh yeah, and I remember, like, you know, we'd walk around, we'd go to a bar. I remember it was the Bowls Club back in those days, right?
Yeah.
And someone would go like, hey, we get a Fanta, what? You know, you're like, oh fuck yeah.
You forget.
And all these years later, where you kind of go, the movies we've done or acted in or shows we've been in or things we've done along the way, you just sort of see them as part of your job.
Mm. Yeah.
And you forget that to the sort of public, it's quite awesome. You know, like even making ads, and it's actually the best job in the world. But we kind of get a little bit... You don't take it for granted, but
I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember one day, you know, getting a bit anxious about like everything I had to do that day, right? It's like, fuck, I've got to run around, I've got to do these things. And then a part of my brain was just like, hold on, stop. You got to go pick up dumplings because you have an anime dumpling night that's sold out. Yeah. Lovely problem to have.
Yes.
Where you're going to screen anime and people are going to watch, You know, people are going to eat dumplings. And then you also got to pick up those t-shirts because you own a t-shirt company.
100%.
Like, don't forget, your life is fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I was
yeah,
like, yeah. okay. And yeah, that just like changed my day.
Yeah, yeah.
But your other big thing, Brian, is voiceovers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're like one of the voiceovers of pretty much all South African ads.
It's a thing I've been doing for the longest.
Yeah.
But
that, especially when it comes to audio, perhaps face is different because you got to maybe be the right face and the right facial expressions and your acting skills, and which you guys obviously have. But I'm just saying that I could imagine you can't get every role for your face.
Yes.
But South Africa, and perhaps other countries are the same, there's a familiarity with certain people's voices. And if you get to be that voice that's familiar, then I know this because I was in advertising at one point. You want to hire the voice that's familiar because you want your brand to be a brand that people are okay listening.
Yeah.
So you bang out a lot of voiceovers, eh?
I mean, it's an industry that kind of ebbs and flows. And well, your stock in the industry ebbs and flows. But I think because I worked it out the other day, I've been doing it for 24 years. And like, I'm just a fixture, right? In the thing. So some people they don't want to use you.
Exactly. I was just about to say, like, I would imagine someone going, okay, well, we can't have that guy because he's the voice of everyone. But then
some people,
and then they come back to you.
Well, it's easy, right? And that I think that's our USP as a production company and in that space where I'm like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna read it right the first time. I know what you want. I've done it all. I've done it from the hard sell retail to
buy.
Yeah, and my kid always laughs when I put on that thing. Yeah. I always do the one that's like the start your day the wimpy way. You know, like that.
Oh
like,
my god, it's so creepy. Like hearing you do it.
It's funny. Yeah? Like it's because it's not my voice.
But it, right? but it's so interesting because you've hit on something that's a fascinating kind of cycle back to where the wine stuff's been quite challenging for us is that in a voiceover context, and Brian and I we often talk about it, we go, there's an expectation of sameness because that's, to your point, that's what you recognize, right? Yeah. So if you hear a wimpy ad, and everyone, this is the irony, right? Everybody goes, we want something cut through and we want something different and we want something unique, and then you can't do it because people aren't expecting that and they don't know what it is.
Yeah. There's the amount of times that you go into the booth and the agency are like, oh, listen, we want something like super edgy, super different, like whatever. And then I'm like, yeah, cool. And then you do a thing, you're like, yes, start your day the wimpy way. And then the client's like, no, I don't know. And then I go, start your day the wimpy way. And
yeah,
like,
that's the one.
That's what we want.
That's what we've heard 100 times.
$29.99. You know, you're like, oh, that's the, oh yes, that's the thing that we want.
So now this is the thing, right? So you go, Russ, what wine are you drinking at the moment, apart from ours, obviously? Like, what's your?
My partner, Liz, she loves wine. Yeah.
Shout out to Liz.
I drink whatever she's drinking. Mm-hmm. I like that sort of Chardonnay. I love myself a little cheeky Chard.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Very good.
There's that fucking kind that's the sort of mixture between the two, but not rosé. Mm. Like the Haut Cabrier.
Oh, Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir.
Okay,
I realized I like that. And so I'm at that point now where she goes like, that's what you like.
Yes.
And I'm like, that is what I like.
Thank you.
That's sort of like muddy.
Yeah, it's loamy. Yeah. It's got that kind of wet cardboardy, like leaf littery.
I'm getting notes of wet cardboard.
Yeah, notes of compost. Yeah. That's the kind of vibe. You know, we like those funky flavors.
One of my first wine tasting experiences was the guy at one point saying, talking about a chocolate wine, and me going, oh, I'm interested.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know,
that phase,
and then
chocolate pinotage.
And then you get through it and you're like, okay, well, when's the chocolate wine? He's like, no, that was two wines ago. And you're like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What was your point?
Yeah, so it was just a bit of a segue, but for us, we're kind of going, the expectation is that good wine's in a bottle. And good wine costs a certain amount and it comes in a certain kind of thing. So we know, right? So we go, okay, what you're drinking now? You go, oh, I like a Pinot Noir and I like a Chardonnay. Not blends, right? Those are just like, it's very like quintessential. Like we get it, we understand it. So even though the Pinot's got it's quite an offbeat flavor for a lot of people. But it's a very like definitive, understandable how it comes, how it's presented. And it's similar to the voice, right? So we go, you kind of go, oh, Chardonnay, I get it and I understand and I like it. And then if I give you, you know, the Finau Pires instead of the Chardonnay, your first instinct is going to be like, this is a lot fruity and it's hectic and it's got sultanas in it and it's all intense. And it's the same with the voice, right?
Yeah.
So, most times you just want the thing that you know. And
you got to circle back to that wimpy ad.
Yeah, you got to circle back to that wimpy ad. But it's a very important thing. And we've been talking about this. It's so interesting. We've been talking about this Rick Rubin book for a little bit. And, you know, we've been chatting around this thing of what is greatness? What is experimentation?
Yeah, he's an interesting case.
It's super interesting.
The more he talks, the more you're like, no, shush, guy. Because the more you talk, the more you're giving away the fact that it's all, there's nothing.
There's exactly.
Yeah. He doesn't know. He's just a dude who like knows what he likes.
That's it.
100%. But also
that book could be one sentence.
The point is,
trust your taste.
Just experiment, and if it's whether it's good or not, almost at some point becomes irrelevant. But we are so consumed, and this is this fine balance that we're trying to tread now between having a business that can be successful and it can, you know, kind of people can engage with it and interact with it, and it speaks to more than just like one individual, but we're locked into this thing of taste, and we're locked into this thing of do the same thing over and over again, make sure it sounds the same, tastes the same, does the same thing, because it's bankable and dependable. And then we kind of go like, so where does the play come in? You know, so the wine that's in our Durs White at the moment, it's a very interesting blend. Now, ostensibly, it's still a dry wine, still a dry white wine, but it's playing on these varietals that come with a drought-tolerant grape, so it matures with quite a lot of density. So it's got a much fruitier, much more pungent. It's not the kind of dry, crisp Sauvignon Blanc green pepper finish that you're going to get. And it's super unusual. And people will go, I don't like that. Or they go like, I don't like a blend, you know. But it's the same way that off the bat, you go, Brian, that wimpy voice doesn't sound right. Just do the other one.
Do the old one
that we've heard 100 times before. And then you start having to take steps back and go, jeepers, like, are we like negating our creativity by not exploring? Are we like, how do we process this thing of like, we want people to drink and enjoy our wine, but we also want to explore what the alternatives are. Like, what does it mean to have something that doesn't taste usual? What does it mean to have something that's not in a bottle, that's in a box? Like, what does it mean to like, how do you put that on your dinner table and make it feel like lekker? It's this.
But you guys can play with that because you can have a Durs White, which is as dependable as you can make it, because obviously you're not in full control. You got to take what they have. But then you should, I'm sure you are doing this, you then have another wing, which is the sort of pretentious room where you're like, oh, I've got a special batch of this.
Well, so,
special, you know, and that's the small, crazy, take a swing on this. And that's what the Bioscope does as well, where it's like every now and again, it's like, hey, watch this weird movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, and we're going to push the boundaries here. But, you know, I'm about to start screening Inside Out 2, which is about the most commercial thing you could think of.
Yeah.
But it's fucking good and smart, and I want to screen it.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be a part of that because... That is well made.
That's it. It's a cool movie. What we've done is we've gone Durs Red, Durs White, Durs Pink. Yeah. Those are our we commission those. They're standardized.
Okay. You have some control there.
Yeah. So we've blended our own wines. We're not just buying offcuts. It's like we've gone through a bunch of processes.
Yeah.
But then we've got our special batches, and those are much more like curated and much kind of smaller. Smaller batch, really good wines. Like, I mean, all the wines are good, but those are like more interesting varietals. I think there's two things that we've Rick Rubin'd, I think, with the wine industry, with the wine business. The one is we've had to rely on our own taste. So, because in terms of literal taste, in terms of the wine. So we'll do tastings and we'll go, yeah, for me, this isn't lekker. I don't know what any of it means. I don't know what grapes do.
Yeah. It's just your personal.
We've just had to go between the four of us. Go, yeah. I think we all like this.
The same with a T-shirt at limited edition. I'm like, I like it.
Yes, exactly.
If I like it, there's a good chance
someone's going to like it.
Yeah,
and then with our sort of marketing and our ads, we'll write a thing, and we'll go, is this what? Like, how, you know, you start to think about it then because we're so used to also creating work for big brands. That have a mandate and then we're like, the voice, if it's if it's our voice, then it's right. If we think it's funny, then it's right.
And it won't be right every time.
Yeah,
and that's also okay. Yeah, that's very important as well, right? And part of the frustration that we have, even when we do work with the big brands, and now we're going back to the voiceover staff, and we talk about this often. Everything becomes very derivative because it has to fit into the box.
Yeah.
And now, and having choice and having this kind of say is pretty terrifying, actually. Mm. And having to rely on your instinct and your taste and your gut and
it's hard because
there's no rule book that goes.
You can go down this road of like, you know, what if people don't like it? But we were talking about this morning. There's a BP garage on our way to work in Dunkeld, and they've always got. I call them my star signs. They put these quotes out on the blackboard outside.
Yeah, that's the one on Jansbank.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I love it. And every time I'm feeling a bit cuck and I drive past and they've got something, and I message Gina and she's like, jeez, they know the inside of my head so well, which is great. And I don't know how they know this, but I think it's supernatural. But they said, we were talking about it this morning, they said, may your decisions reflect your hopes and not your fears.
May your decisions reflect your hopes and not your fears.
May your choices or decisions reflect your hopes and not your fears. Like, may they be guided by your hopes and not your fears. And we've had to kind of work so hard to lean into the belief that this is great and this is good and we like it.
Yeah.
And starting to look at that rather than, what if people don't like it?
Yeah.
Because if you go, what if people don't like it, you've sunk. You're dead in the water.
And at this point, in the video store, I always come to try and rent you something. And I've just touched on Inside Out 2. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that this is what I must rent to you guys. Mm-hmm. And you must see it because at the core of the movie is about who's in control. And it starts with the characters we know, Amy Poehler's character Joy being the main person. But as our main character now hits puberty, more like the whole headquarters is demolished and more people come in. Mm-hmm. And the main character is Anxiety. Mm-hmm. And this little character, Anxiety, then takes control. She makes a good case as to why she needs to be in control, but she takes control. And you realize that you can't be driven by anxiety.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting that this is what makes this movie so smart, is that here we are, you know, in our 40s. Talking about the same thing, which is like you can't be driven by the anxiety imagination. You've got to be driven by the happy stuff. That's lovely.
The hopes, yeah.
Let's take a quick little journey because I'm actually very curious to know. Where did we grow up?
I grew up in the mean streets of Parkview.
Nice.
Yeah, I've got the area code tattooed on my knuckles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. in Roman numerals.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought how do you represent the 2193?
There's no rap albums that sort of.
I mean, there is. Yeah. I mean, there's some rap songs, you know, from you know.
You touched on the fact that you were in a band. I think it's worth mentioning because one of your band members is also a guy who works at the video store, Gad.
Yeah.
You were in a band called Scott Scott.
We were in a band called Scott
and
Scott.
And that's that's such a lovely little timestamp because I think there's only so many humans in South Africa that remember who Scott was.
100%.
Because that was a job a little bit like a video store.
Yes.
Where, you know, they kind of no longer really needed.
Yes.
And that was the continuity
presenter on Mnet.
And the Mnet guys would tell you what's on now, what's on next. Mm. And they were stars. They were famous people.
I was watching The Gods Must Be Crazy. Gods Must Be Crazy 2, was it 1 or 2? Where Sandra Prinsloo was in it. And I don't know if she was a continuity presenter, but I mean, she was like...
Yeah.
I feel like
she's a household name.
Yeah, I think...
Theater.
I think she was more of a theater. Okay. These continuity presenters... They were a big deal.
Yeah.
Or Ashley Hayden's gap. Or Ashley Hayden. Got us through high school, that gap.
Yeah.
the gap
we had Pubby Malloy on the show.
Oh, okay.
And we went over, just before we did the visit, we went over to Been There for a coffee. Mm. And she greeted a woman and I recognized the woman, but I wasn't sure. And then I was like, who was that again? She's like, that was Ashley Hayden.
There we go.
Oh my God, that was the woman from my childhood.
Yeah, that's it.
With the gap in her teeth.
Yes. Well, we worked with Fizile.
Fizile Mpela.
He was also like...
Also a continuity presenter.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the same era as...
He's a great actor.
Scott Scott was like
it was Scott, and then you'd flick over to whatever, and then Rian Kreavachen would be on the news, yeah, right? Like that. It was it's the same kind of, and then you'd watch Zet.
Yeah,
so, you know what I mean, or Elf.
But you, yeah, you had this comedy rock band that was kind of like Flight of the Conchords before Flight of the Conchords.
Well,
like you predated a lot of that, where it was like it wasn't silly music. But it was very smart, fun comedy.
Well, I like to think the thing that I'm actually asked, I messaged Gad and Isaac, who were in the band together, and like I keep sending them music that's popular now.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, we were doing this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was like, because it was like synthy disco.
Yeah, and like, it was songs about like Steve Irwin and
yeah. Also, like, that was mainly because I didn't
through
have
the, through the, from the perspective of the crocodile.
Yes, 100%. The crocodile song. It was cool. You know, yeah, it was about how Steve Irwin molested crocodiles. I think that's the chorus. But it was such a draw because we, you know, how that band started. Actually, there's actually it is a fun story on how that band started, because we all played in different bands before that band.
Yeah.
And then Dave Kabuka. Do you remember Dave Kabuka?
Sure. Yeah. He's now sort of Trevor Noah's second in command.
100%. So Dave wanted to make a band. So he basically, like Voltron, got together the only guys in the industry that he knew. Some, I don't know why he brought me in on guitar, but that was a mistake. But so he brought me in, he brought Gad in to play keys, he brought Isaac in to play drums, and he was going to play like acoustic guitar and sing like Dave Matthews type shit.
Okay.
So we all went to like this rehearsal room in JCE. But he was late, as Dave always was.
Yeah.
And so we got there and we were kind of sitting there waiting for him. We're like, okay, this is boring. So I was like, well, let's just fuck around while we wait for Dave to get here. And we didn't have a bassist. So Gad is like, oh, you know, I'll play synth bass. You know, we can be. So he starts playing like disco, like octave, boom, bing, boom, bing, boom, bing, boom, bing.
That's what every short straw song sounds like if you were to just isolate the keyboard.
That's it. And I mean, listen, if it ain't broke, you know, it's like, I mean, even the music I make today is still like, I was like, boom, bing, I'm going to start with the octave bass. Like, I think it needs to start. And I try not to do it. I try. I'm like, I'm going to do something more interesting. And I was like, you know what the song needs? A little bit of boom, bing, boom, bing, boom. And I'm always fucking right. So Gad starts with this octave bass, and then Isaac starts with like a little disco type thing. And I'm like, and then I start playing like a disco chanky chank guitar. And we're like, guys, this is fucking amazing. This is amazing. And then I start rapping like over it. And we're like, this is it. Dave arrives like half an hour late for his own thing. We're like, bro, you've been kicked out your own band.
Before it
hadn't even started. We're like, we made something cool. Yeah. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, fine, I get it. And he just walked away. And then from then on, we just would go to Gad's house.
Yeah.
And we'd sit there and we'd make a cool beat. Like, this is rad. And we're like, okay, we need some lyrics.
Yeah.
And then I'd look around the room and go like,
oh, yeah, he's got a weird creepy room.
100%. And I'd be like, well, there's some weird shit to talk about. let's just sing about that.
Oh, lovely, man. No, it's got a big place in my heart, and I think it should come back. In some shape or form, it should come back.
I miss it. There was some, you know what? Sorry, just on that thing.
Even if it's just for you.
100%. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's that thing where, again, a thing you take for granted, right? And we go, we created, just with Scott, which was like, a fun sort of thing that existed for a couple, 2 years or something. But we created probably 15 to 20 songs that we made and finished and whatever that don't really exist in the world anymore. You know, like there's
just some pre-streaming.
100%. And there was some like little bootleggy type things that we did on the side, some like shit recordings that we did at Gad's house. But you like, fuck, you create. And it exists in the world for like this, and then it disappears. And I'm quite like interested in trying to catalog that stuff, or
just
collect it and put it away, just because it was a thing. It you know, there's songs that were created and made that you just want to hold on to, even just to put in a museum. You know, like your museum of your own laptop.
Yeah. No, I've got the same. I've got a trunk in storage, and I was like, everything must fit in this trunk. I don't want to have more than this trunk.
Mm.
But there's like the short straw stuff, there's the t-shirt things, there's personal stuff. It's just for me, because I wanted to archive.
Yes.
What were some of the puppy love films? What was the film that sort of came to you when you were a kid? Where did you grow up? Joburg as well.
Yeah,
right?
I'm Joburg. I was kind of more like the northern northern reaches. So I was in like the 4AZ, 4AZ, no ways, upwe.
Yeah, I was Bryanston. I wasn't far away.
Yeah, so I mean, much more Lani than 4AZ, right? That was like the, it always has been.
Yeah. 4AZ was, you remember Monte Cassino, like there were cars there.
I remember when Monte was built, you know, and and you know, for all its faults.
Yeah.
That was the circus coming to town. You know, that was like, I mean, we grew up like we had the park and the river and, you know, we'd, I don't know, put sinkers on a fishing line and see how far we could cast it. You know, that was Saturday. And then Monty arrived.
In the Yuxgay.
And then Monty arrived. And that, I mean, that's Vegas shit.
Yeah,
right?
And
it just, it was pretty, like it was pretty amazing and it was there. And then you got really big roads.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I don't know if the roads still exist there because I know it's not in great shape going down those streets at the moment. But it was like big roads and like big intersections and Monty and big cinemas, right? Like and an arcade, which was like a thing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, before that, I mean, you had like
it was the perfect place to mall rat.
Oh.
We were sort of 4 years mall kids in high school up until Monty was built, and then we're like, oh, Jesus, we know where we're going to go.
Yeah, it was a real Big Daddy kind of moment, you know.
I went to Sandton City, and that was like, that was as far north as
that was as far north. You couldn't cross. I mean, Sandton City, that was.
That was also wild because there was lots of different avenues to Morat in Sandton.
Yeah.
You know, you could make your way over to the hotels, you could go over to the Mandela Square.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe score a little cocktail from some place that doesn't know you're young.
Yeah.
A little strawberry daiquiri from Delancey's.
Yeah, no, exactly. We went to a Chinese place that served us Cape Velvet.
Very good.
Lovely.
That's great.
What films do you remember that sort of came to you when you were a kid?
So, I mean, for me, it was... that's when the time we used to go to the video shop, right? And that was like, so it was, I mean, Jurassic Park, like banger. I was saying to Ash, I think I watched that like literally 30 times.
Yeah.
But every Police Academy.
Okay.
Was my thing.
The characters, I guess.
I just loved Police Academy.
I didn't watch enough Police Academy.
Sure, I watched
I just remember the dude who did the sound effects.
Motormouth Jones, what's his name? His real name is...
The character was called Motormouth Jones.
Motormouth Jones, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And Ash, for you?
Yeah, for me, it was kind of more of those kind of kid-centric-y. So it was like Mighty Ducks.
Nice.
Cool Runnings. I used to watch on repeat. You know, that was like a big one for me.
Good sports movie.
It's just, you know.
But
just
triumphant. Like, and sometimes they won, sometimes they didn't. But, you know, they learned a lesson along the way.
100%. And it was just like those kind of like really, like Three Ninja Kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like that was like always the kind of like stuff you
Rocky
could go outside.
Rocky loves Emily.
100%.
Rocky loves Emily.
Can you name all three Ninja Kids?
Rocky, Tum Tum, Colt.
Come on.
And it's funny because like now it's I'm doing the thing now that like my in-law tried to do to me when, you know, I was like in varsity. He's like, you got to watch this movie. I've got the tape. Bolero, it was called. I never forget. He's like, you got to watch Bolero. It's about a Russian ballet dancer, and seminal in the 70s or some shit. And then you got to watch it. And it was always like, you got to watch Bolero. And now I'm with my kids. I'm like, you got to watch D3 was like the one that was like they were all a bit older, like Ninja Kids, and I've been trying to find the earlier Karate Kid stuff, but it's always like always the Will Smith kid one that comes up, and I'm like, that's not really Karate Kid, and it's it's cool, but it's like it's not Karate Kid, you know, it's not. And it's so funny how you want to. So in fact, what is cool is, so my kid Tokyo, he goes he does that speech now from Cool Runnings, like, I am strength. I am power. You're just a badass mother that don't take no crap from no one. And I was like, it is such a great like thing for an 8-year-old to be able to go like, oh, like it made him feel powerful. And it's, again, speaking of Inside Out, it's like, what great lessons to be outsiders, to work hard for something unique, to find like a motley crew that's okay to be looked upon. It's okay not to have all the bucks, but you've got the passion and the desire. And it's also okay not to win.
Because you
win in different ways, right? Yeah. So at the end of Cool Runnings,
spoiler alert.
They crash. Yeah. You know, they crash. And also the guy, I can't remember what his name, he's dead now.
John Candy.
John Candy, he's dead. Yeah. I think that was a cocaine thing, hey?
I don't know.
Mm.
Candy cane.
it could have been just a heart attack.
But it is cool. It is cool, right? And it's like there's that intrinsicness of like you didn't win, but you picked yourself up and you tried and you did a thing and you broke new ground. And it's like
it is funny how you're trying to like revisit those, like we showed Sandlot the other day and like Home Alone.
Home Alone.
Like these, you go, I mean,
some of them live up.
Well, we tried Ace Ventura, and like the opening scene is basically this that like a sort of richish housewife going down on him, and he's holding onto the ceiling fan and like getting spun around, and we're like, oh fuck yeah, I forgot about that. It's like that's not suitable for an 8-year-old. What's happening there? We're like, oh no, he's just spinning. I don't know, she's spinning him.
It's so funny. Yeah. But you say your kid's 8, eh?
Yeah, he's 8. So I got 2. I got an eight and a four.
Names? Tokyo.
Yeah, so Tokyo's the older one, and then Ziggy's the smaller one.
What cool names.
Yeah, man.
They can't be accountants.
Can't be accountants, although they probably will be, just to spite me.
Yeah. Ziggy.
Just to spite my life. Yeah, Ziggy. He's something to be reckoned with. You should have him on the show.
Should have called him like Ben or something.
Yeah, I should have.
Just Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Just Grant.
Lovely. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now 8 is the perfect age for Inside Out 2. Because it's like it's just as like puberty's on the cusp, you know.
I know, my nose already been he knows it's coming.
Yeah.
How old is Noah now?
8 as well. Yeah. He's been preempting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's lovely that these puppy love films get this kind of second wind when you've got the kids.
Yeah.
Over into high school, what was your sort of high school crush film? Do you remember one that stuck out to you?
Yeah.
Where did we go to high school?
Parktown Boys.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, it was wild. I loved high school. I loved school.
I also had a very, very good time.
Yeah. So for me, like again, it was the films that I suppose like really that created the taste I think that I've got today, I think ridiculous. But so Holy Grail, Monty Python's Quest for the Holy Grail was like I was watching it with my kid this week.
Yeah,
and
that's timeless.
Fuck, and I can quote every line in it. It's just like
were also complete outsiders. A little bit like you guys entering the wine market. It's like they were completely absurd, and the world didn't know what to do with Monty Python.
100%. And I mean, it's amazing for me seeing my child crying with laughter at the knights who say knee, and we're like, what a ridiculous idea that these knights say knee as a torture device, you know. So there was that, and then I was very, very influenced by like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, like at that time where I was like Guy Ritchie was just doing,
and that dialogue is just so good, the character, it's like,
so cool, and the music, and there was a slickness to all of that.
It's a confidence they hold court. I sort of realized what the special sauce of Guy Ritchie is, that you know when those characters sit down and talk, you listen to them because they just got this like big dick energy. Even though they've got this kind of Cockney accent, you wouldn't have taken them seriously. They're speaking in this sort of way that no human sort of really ever speaks in real life.
And there was such a style to every like, and I remember it's just like Finger Thing and Herbalizer like on the soundtracks and like those sorts of like quite like just I don't know, there was like a just a rad like for me that whole aesthetic, I was like, oh, I just want this, I want to be able to do this thing, you know. Like, it was so cool.
Yeah. For yourself, Ash, high school?
Yeah, well it's kind of interesting. So my mom was a history teacher, so she would come home with like the World at War series. You know, so like I'd spend my holidays watching like World War One and World War Two videos and then DVDs. Like that's kind of what that was like the thing, right? So like anything that kind of like segued from that was great, because at the time it's like I was interested in it, but it felt like learning, you know, and I always felt like I was being educated by my mother. And it's like in hindsight, again, it's like that's my jam now. Like epic historical anything is like I'm into that. Make the book longer. Yeah. You know, I want long shit that talks about like eons of warfare, but not that I'm encouraging like death and violence. So for me, it was kind of slightly more of the, I guess maybe more trivial stuff or like stuff that
made it a bit more stupid for me. Yeah, like I was never particularly cool. So you know, the guy from American Pie really related to quite a lot. Yeah. So like American Pie was huge for me. Sure, and I know it's horrific now and it's cancelled and whatever and you can't not allowed to watch it. And but at the time there was like a big deal. And then you know, I guess the elaboration on that would have been Cruel Intentions.
Yeah.
And that was just, talk about puberty. That was it was so sexy, you know.
Just delicious. Jesus. I look back on, I watched Cruel Intentions more as an adult, like let's say in the sort of late 20s. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cheesy. So, funny. It didn't age.
Well, it's Dawson's Creek stuff, you know. I mean, you had Pacey and you had, what's his name? Joshua Jackson. You know, like you had him and it's like the prime of Ryan Philippe. You had that stuff and it was like the soundtrack. I mean, it did the whole thing.
Just them like kissing in that Central Park scene. It's like, it was seminal.
It really, really was. You know, and it was at the same time that like, there was like The Matrix, you know, had just come. And you go how do you even rationalize that you can like both of these things?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember, as an aside, where I was going to make my stage name Brian Philippe?
I don't remember that at all. I really don't.
I went through a patch of like going, because I'm going to be
because like, Brian John Philip Fanica.
I'm Brian John Philip Fanica.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And I was like, Brian Fanica isn't like a very sexy stage name, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's not a stage name. It's just a fucking
dumb name
that I got. And I was like, you know, I'm Brian John Philip Fanica. So I was like, oh, I could be Brian John Philip, Brian Philip, Brian Philippe, Brian Johnson, Brian John.
Yeah.
You know,
BJ. No, it's just BJ. He's DJ BJ.
DJ BJ is my DJ name.
Speaking of Ryan Philippe.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Another one I thought about, actually, which was in kind of, I guess, hold hands a little bit with Cruel Intentions, was The Beach. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That was a cracker, right?
Also, there's an era of banger soundtracks.
Banging soundtracks.
On like Hackers, The Beach, Cruel Intentions, like it all had Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet,
like, all had such good soundtracks. Good soundtracks.
Yeah, yeah.
Local God by Everclear on that Romeo and Juliet soundtrack like blew my socks off.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I was an Everclear fan from that.
Funny with Everclear, I went to CD Warehouse in Rosebank.
Yeah.
And I remember, because you know, I used to go like bargain bin hunting.
Yeah.
And I remember finding Sparkle and Fade like just in the bargain bin and going, oh, this looks like a funny, looks like a nice album cover.
Yeah.
And finding Everclear through that, like sort of as like a weird, you know, like that's how you used to find music. Yeah. Like used to try and sneak it. Like
I've got a very funny story about my like finding of the first CD I ever bought, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So also it was a CD Warehouse and went in there and again, as I said, it's like I didn't have a particularly cool credibility growing up, but I knew that Gangster's Paradise was like it was a big song.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
But it was a big song, and I didn't know the lyrics, but my mates knew the lyrics. Well, like kind of the cool kids at school knew the lyrics, and my mates and I would like kind of listen in and pretend to know the lyrics. But it was a big deal, and so I got a CD player for my birthday. It was a JVC. It had a three disc loader at the front, which was quite cool. Yeah, it was pretty fancy. I mean, my parents, they really went out on a limb to get that, and it was pretty amazing. So it had three discs, but obviously I could only get one CD because that's what was left of the birthday present. And I went in and couldn't remember the name of the artist for Gangster's Paradise, but it was cool something. So it was like, I'm looking for cool something. I'm saying to the person behind the counter, you know, I mean, there's no like internet and shit. It's cool something, so they're like, it's this. So I look at it and I'm like, are you sure? This is the one. So it was Cool in the Gang. So I go home and I put it. I'm like, I had Celebrate on my thing. And it's like, I had one CD that I had to listen to. That and like Medieval Babes that my mom bought, you know? So I was like, so I had two CDs.
Yeah.
So I had Cool in the Gang and Medieval Babes in my three CD shuttle. And all I wanted was Gangster's Paradise.
What is Medieval Babes?
Yeah.
So Medieval Babes is like a group of like Celtish women who like bring.
Celtish or cultish?
Celtish. I mean, it's the occult. So it's kind of like a
Gregorian chant.
It's a neoclassical Gregorian Celt chant. So you got like set up. So all I wanted was fucking Gangster's Paradise, and I had to listen to Cool in the Gang.
It's so funny,
and then like Brian always laughs at me because I can never remember the name of a band. The first time, so I really liked Gold Digger when it came out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I asked for Kaya and West. You know, like that's how poor my
no, he's like, terrible.
So, but the thing is though, like I feel as though in hindsight again it's good because it's not me to listen to gangsters, but like I can hear it on someone else's.
It's more never radio. To
but actually, but
more
actually,
of a celebrate guy.
I am more of a celebrate guy. Like, I genuinely am. It's like, and it's about embracing that. I mean, it's that's just that's the thing,
that.
You know. It's like that's just fucking
the universe,
what it is.
The universe just knew what you
needed. Universe knew.
We had a conversation at a bar the other day when we were like, "What's the first CD you ever bought?"
Mm.
And we went around the table and like the first guy was like, "Offspring, Smash." I was like, fuck off, it wasn't. Don't lie. Don't lie. You're not that cool. Like, come on.
Some people are though.
No, well, maybe.
Some people are.
I remember having to pick out my first CD.
This guy.
Was Offspring, Smash your first?
No, to be fair, it was Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. Yeah.
That's still cool.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I remember being very young. Mm. And struggling. I had to pick one, you know. It was like, you're allowed one. And you're like, oh my God, oh my God. Mm. Panic bought the soundtrack to Free Willy 2. And I remember looking back on it going like, oh my God, this was the first CD I ever bought. Like, fuck.
Funny. That's, cool. Yeah, that's
But again, like, amazingly memorable.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It's a good
and that's,
story, yeah.
Interestingly, even like for myself, like who's not a music person, remember that very clearly.
Yeah.
You know, remember the time.
Remember the time. Remember, but that's as much as I got.
also, that's Earth, Wind & Fire.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah,
we're getting it wrong.
Yeah, no. But I mean, you know,
it's in the same role.
Yeah.
Okay, over in Varsity, we're at Wits now.
Yeah.
We're making plays.
Yeah.
We're very academic and clever.
Yes.
We're getting into, we're watching the stuff.
What are some of those ones that stand out?
I mean, like, I think for me it was Big Lebowski. I mean, it's an obvious one, but it's not really. That's that movie.
It's such a frustrating movie.
It's so frustrating, but it's just like everything about it. Like, just I just loved. It's so quotable, but
this is what you get. And you fuck with a man, shit. Yeah, what is that line?
It's
something like,
when you fuck
a person in the ass, this is what you get.
Yes,
you fuck a man in the ass or something.
And Flea as a nihilist, as a German nihilist. I loved it. But the thing I think that like, and it was kind of a crossover from high school that I ended up just watching a lot of like hood stoner movies.
Okay.
So there's like I've always actually been someone who's got quite trashy taste.
Yeah.
The books I read are like Pulp Fiction. The movies I prefer to watch are just like, I like the trash. And so I remember you just went through a phase of just, it was Friday after next, How High, Pootie Tang, just all those movies just were my thing.
But perhaps you needed that as an anecdote against the theory and the seriousness of Varsity.
I was thinking about the wine. It's like my dad was a big, I took a photo of my dad 2 years ago drinking a beer because it was the first time I'd ever seen him drink a beer.
Because he was a wine
guy. He was a wine guy.
Yeah.
And so I was like,
my dad was a wine guy too.
And so wine's lame then. I was like, oh, fuck wine. And my dad's always like made like fancy French food. And I was like, oh, I want a burger. I want to rail against the pretentiousness, right?
Mm.
And I think that's where like a movie like Pootie Tang, where I was like, this is cinema, you know, like this is what I'm here for.
It's lovely. Like, but it's a part of like, I associate you with humor.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy hanging out with you, and when I get a chance to see you, or when we've crossed paths, you know, and it comes from all the humor that you've ingested, and that's a part of you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not a serious guy, and that's a good thing. Don't ever fucking change that.
Damn it! You are serious. You are quite serious most of the time.
Can he be?
But he finds things funny, and that's good. You know, I often look across the desk at work, and Brian will be doing research for something. And he's just sitting and his head's down and he's like holding his nose. So he's got this thing like Brian always says, like he's sniffing. We go, he's sniffing. It's like, you know, it's this laugh. so it's like, and I just look down and it's like, he's kind of like, he's got a very aquiline nose and it's like tucked under.
Very pointy.
It's very pointy and long and aquiline. We were saying like there might be a cleft at the end of his nose a little bit. No, it's like developing slightly. So it's not as like kind of shark finny as it used to be.
Yeah.
But it'll be like kind of like tucked into his jacket and it's like his shoulders are like just
because
going.
Because
and he goes,
you got
to, he's giggling and he's like, you got to watch this. And then he turns the computer on and I'm unfortunately, and I'm working hard against this now, but I'm the person, it's because I judge myself, not you.
Yeah.
But I'm the person that you go, here's a joke. And I go, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are like, but you didn't laugh. And I'm like, apologize. Now I'm apologizing, but it's like I'm processing the comedy.
Okay.
And Brian's very good at laughing, and he'll turn the computer on and like, this took me by surprise, and he shows me the thing and I watch it, and then I don't want to fake laugh, but I can see why it's funny. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you are a funny person, but it's like you find things funny, which is great. Yeah. It's a good gift to laugh with people, you know. I'm trying to learn how to share that.
I saw the thing of like, the thing that made me laugh recently was like they overdubbed Seal, Kiss from a Rose, with Arnold Schwarzenegger's voice.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It gets me.
I just love all the sort
sniffing.
Of,
lots
the,
of sniffing.
All the wild advancements of AI. Yeah, like one of the first things we pump out is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger singing Kiss from a Rose. Oh, but it gets me, hey, because I love that song. That song for me is one of my faves.
Even then, me, I know that song.
What was the varsity film for you, Ash?
So, I think, and again, it's something Brian and I were talking about, which is you go through that kind of academic, you take yourself a little bit more seriously as an artist or a creator. And it was an era where we kind of had a little bit more access to foreign film, independent film, and it became, you know, like Motorcycle Diaries was a big one at the time. Yeah, it was like it was the era of like Gael García Bernal, and it was City of God, which you got exposed to, and you felt like an amazing film.
I remember us watching City of God one afternoon, one of the last classes of university that day, and the sun setting over Great Hall stairs, and us all walking back to our cars, and no one saying a word. Just for 10-15 minutes, everyone was just like, just couldn't process what they just watched.
Yeah, it was, looking back now, it was cool to be able to, and it was to your point of you woke up and you go like your days, you know, at the time we're like, oh, fuck FEPA, and now we've got to study this and we've got to write an essay.
Like,
they want us to like talk about this, but like how cool that we actually like got to do it. I mean, I did a very strange thing in fourth year. I did a section or a term on psychoanalysis and the thriller. Okay. I actually did it with Daryl.
Okay, cool. The guy who started the Bioscope with me.
Yeah, it was like, and again, it was an opportunity to kind of engage more as, you know, in a context.
That's what varsity's good for,
And then there was another one that I actually remembered about, and we looked at a reference for it, which was, a Julie Taymor, which was Across the Universe, and it was this like Beatles, like big, because again, something
came
like,
up the other day at the video store.
You know, obviously, like kind of, I've just listened to a very fascinating podcast, which is basically charting like war, Vietnam War, and like kind of the rise of the Rocky type characters in American culture.
Yes.
And you know, obviously, so we've got Apocalypse Now, and we've got kind of Deer Hunter, and we've got all like these big bangers. And again, off the World at War series that I watched when I was young. Yeah. It's like these kind of things, like again, it just like perpetuated the cycle of like historical stuff for me. And then when you mix Vietnam with like the Beatles, and then Julie Taymor, who went to the Lecoq School in France, actually.
She was the filmmaker of Across the Universe.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I actually got accepted to go there to that school. So I'd done like my honors thing was in physical performance. So essentially like I'm a qualified clown.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is amazing, you know, to get job opportunities of that's pretty. But you know, to like, so you're like mixing Beatles and again, I can't sing. And I remember I got home from watching that movie with Gina, who's now my wife and the mother of my children, companion, but she can sing. And I remember like being so desperate to be able to like do that.
Yeah.
You know, and like obviously we're studying performance and it's like we're affected by like Gerard Marx, who was a designer at the time, and Sarah Roberts, who's like making amazing sets, and this whole thing was like puppetry. And you know, I was like, it's that thing of when you go, I was so inspired. And again, we watch clips of it now and it is great, but it's got its time and it's got its place, and it's like there are like twee moments. But at the time I was like, that thing was the thing, right?
Across the Universe is great. It really, really is special. I love it. And what, just thinking back on it, we mentioned this, is that sort of two-thirds of the way through, there's the Ken Kesey character played by Bono. They start
Big
tripping.
Top, yeah.
And then it starts reflecting the part of the Beatles, which was when they started taking psychedelic drugs. And that influenced the music. It's Sgt. Pepper's.
From the
and
bus, when the bus comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's that scene with Eddie Izzard, and they sing a song that most people don't know of the Beatles. I didn't even know it. That sort of the Blue People. You know, it's the weird Beatles that wasn't the most famous. That's where I think you lose most mainstream people in that movie, and it's delightful because that's when they like check out. I've played it too.
Is that when they land in the circus? When they end up in the circus?
Yeah, they sort of go through this like sort of trippy motion, and it's just so lovely that it's this beautiful, very accessible movie up to that point, and you're like, this is where the mainstream people...
Which is the trajectory the Beatles took, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And then, of course, it all comes back in the end. You just got to endure the weird scene, and then the movie gets back on track, and it's
But
it's
how
great.
Weird that it's a Vietnam movie. Mm. You know, it's like the whole thing's so mental that you go, like, you're pulling, like, Beatles music and that stuff, and you're putting it in, like, a Vietnam context, and it was just
scene
great.
Scene of him enlisting and going to war, and, like, oh,
and then,
it's great.
And the crazy part is, as I'm talking about this and I'm trying to kind of rationalize what are the other films that I like, the character that's sticking in my head is Spike from Notting Hill. And it's like, that was also super inspiring for me. And I'm like, it's fucked up that those two things can be like seminal in my life. You know, I just thought of Spike in those goggles and the underpants. And it's just, and then I go, okay, and he was also the leg in that Keanu Reeves football movie. He had the cigarette and he was the replacement or whatever.
The replacement.
And again, stupid, but absolutely loved that, you know, loved that film. And
he was a great actor.
You could argue that, you know, Notting Hill had all the makings of a good rom-com. It had all the touch points, all the moments, endearing characters, good old Hugh Grant and his...
In his
kookiness. But the secret sauce was Spike. Secret sauce was that.
And his girlfriend.
And that's what the British do so well. They've got that entourage. Yeah. They've got that ensemble.
Death at a funeral.
They do that so well. And they
so
just,
well.
When they show up, they fucking slap, they deliver. You might not want to watch a Spike movie.
No.
But it was just enough of him to disrupt.
There was a time
great.
In my life where if you said to me, who's your favorite actor? I said Reese Evans. Just because I was like, I related to, and also I think I looked a bit like him.
But was he not doing that thing that we've just been talking about, which is that it was an experiment, and it's not for everyone, and that's the thing. So like Hugh Grant's for everyone, Sauvignon Blanc, Hugh Grant, and it's great. Yeah. Like that's the thing, right? And Reese Evans is like the other thing, and it just like it hits you and it stands out. And as you said, maybe you don't want to drink a whole bloody dose of the stuff, but it's quite lacquer to have a taste of it every now and then, and it's super memorable, and it's something that like feels like I've learned from.
Lovely. Okay, our last one is the film that you could settle down with. What do you think is the sort of one of the it's never about it being definitive. It's just
the competition.
Sort of
it's a competition to see who's his best. It's the whose album, like Brian's got Blink or whatever his first album was that he bought. What was it?
Alanis Morissette and Oasis.
It's
not a competition. It's never a competition.
It is a competition.
It's a competition.
No, so I mean, if you were to ask other people what my sort of all time favorite movie is, they would either say Big Lebowski or Fargo. So for me, I'd go Fargo just because it's a little bit...
A little bit fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like such a good mix of comedy, like a dry comedy.
But there's a wood chipper.
There's a wood chipper, exactly. Yeah. And I've got this thing, like Ash and I, you know, when we're writing stuff, we go, it doesn't feel like... It feels like you need to say fuck, see a dick, and like maybe someone dies. For a thing to be lacquer. So
to be real.
So
that's the important part, is to be real. There's nothing worse than watching someone try to do that and it just ends up being them swearing more than they should.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And then you're like, oh, you were trying to be authentic and cool.
Yeah, it's like a stand-up comic kind of going, just saying fuck a lot because it feels like...
But sometimes you do need that because we do get naked.
Yes, exactly.
We do have awkward sex. We do have
100%.
You know, we do swear, especially South Africans.
Yeah.
And there was that great fact about something like statistically, people who do swear in front of people are smarter, or people take you more seriously. And
The amount of times I use it when there's like an issue, you know, like so. Oh, I'm his phone. I'm like home affairs or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're trying to get something done, and particularly when it's like with another business, and then I'll go, so, guys, this is really starting to fuck me off. Yeah. And then that's when they're like, oh, yes, sir. Like, we'll, you know, you just like, just check it in as like,
it's extremely powerful in a formal context.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's no longer kind of talking in Afrikaans in front of your kids a little bit. You know, it's like shit serious now.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. This is, I think, like, genuinely, I appreciate the work you've been putting up until this point, but this is starting to fuck me off.
So, I was listening. I did a little bit of election research, kind of building up to the vote.
Oh, more than most.
Yeah. So I was watching that Biz Talk or whatever. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
It's hosted. Mm. And they've got a couple of people, and they had Gaten McKenzie come on, and I'm
afraid I don't know who that
is. So Gaten, he's PA, Patriotic Alliance. They've done pretty well, but he came on, and like there was some talk about him, and I didn't know anything about the Oak. Obviously, people are the thing, and he got on, and he just started like letting rip about this fucking thing and that fucking thing, and it's like now you got like supposedly upstanding members of society, but basically it's like the press of the DA that are sitting watching this thing, and he's like, nah, it's a fuck up, and this person's a motherfucker, and if that motherfucker takes one, I'm like, this like could be pretty interesting as a friend. I'm like, because like a dude that's prepared to stand up and like this shit's fucked, and it's, you know, and it's like, I go, okay, cool, like there's a thing, there's a vibe here, and
it then, sounds so silly sometimes when you know, they're acting like children, and you've got honorable member, honorable member. It's like, no one's fucking honorable.
No one's honorable. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stop that decorum.
Yeah. Exactly.
You've lost control of the house. Stop just saying that phrase.
Exactly.
Yeah, as Gaten would say, it's a fuck up.
It's a fuck up.
It's a fuck up.
Did we cover what your what your film is?
So, like, again, it's hard, but I've got to go with the thing that I would watch more than once.
Yes.
Because that's like, I feel like, it's, you know, and it's not because I'm seeing other stuff in it. So we had a conversation the other day about travel, and we were saying like, why do people keep going back to the same place if they've been there?
Sure.
And there is an element of, because you discover new things, but sometimes it's just because it makes you feel good.
Yeah. No, I tend to order the same thing at restaurants because I'm like, as I sit down, I taste that ribeye. I'm sure they make other stuff, but I fucking love that ribeye. So I'm going to eat that.
Maybe we're playing into this whole thing again, almost what this discussion's been about, which is, you know, do we have to work so hard at being different or unique or out there, or like, do we have to experiment the whole time, or can we have these little things that are just
for us that
are good? And so I've got two that I'd like to float in this
honorable member
in this forum. There's two, and neither of which one's a bit more acclaimed than the other one. Right. I think the other one might be considered a flop, actually.
No judges.
So I think like if I had to go home and get to watch a movie now, it would probably be Last Samurai, and it's a Tom Cruise. It's a Tom Cruise absolute turd bag film about a.
No, he was literally the last.
He's the last samurai. You know, it's like this.
I like it when the title tells you what the movie is.
He's
about.
What it is. You know, he's just like, he's this American. He's basically an American Civil War vet.
Yeah, I know.
Who's now a mercenary, and he goes over, and then you've got like these.
I haven't watched it.
Yeah, you got the natives in Japan who.
But why do you love that one?
So, I don't know.
Okay.
But there's something about just the...
Well, you like historical things.
I like historical things.
Shout out to mom
for World at War. But also like shout out to Tom Cruise for just being like a part of my life for so long. And also he's so small. And he does things that are like so like...
Are you saying from a performance perspective or from a height?
No, from a height. From a height. He's just like... There's something like just literally it feels as though he's just been... in a lot of the films that make me feel good.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I like it, you know, and it's just like, it's the thing that I've watched numerous times, and it just kind of tickles me. And it's like, there's something stupid about the honor code, and there's something about like, you know, learning, being away from your...
Can I just say that you love Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You love Japan.
Yeah.
And you love historical war things.
So it's the intersection of all things. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. It's not a mystery.
Because the second place
you named your kid Tokyo.
I named my kid Tokyo. And the second place to that would have been Gladiator. And it's historical. And it's like Russell Crowe doing cool shit. Which
you actually quote it a lot.
I do quote it a lot. And yeah, it's just, yeah. it felt like, also, there's something about Joaquin Epic. Phoenix.
Oh, he's
and
the worst.
He's the worst, yeah, you know what I mean?
You just want to jump into that role. You just want to kill him.
And it's, it just, it's films, it's films I can watch like often, you know?
That's lovely.
I can watch it over and over, and can't say the same about City of God, as great as it is.
No, no, exactly. No, it's a wild movie with violence and all sorts. It's it's not something you just got to see it once. Listen, guys, we can chat about wine and movies forever, but I'm going to let you guys get back to your days. What is a day like today hold for you?
We've got to
Win some jobs.
Yeah, we've got to go
tell people that this commercial is going to change their life, and this is how we're going to do it for you.
And start your day the wimpy way.
That's it.
I'll do the voiceover for free.
For free, yeah, exactly.
No, but
unless you want something different, in which case I'll do the voiceover.
Yeah, we're gonna go do a pitch.
We got a couple of pitches.
A couple of pitches. Yeah, that's our life.
No, lovely guys.
Pitching on things. Hey, but it's nice to see you.
It's nice to catch up, man. Yeah. I must say, I used the video store as a chance, quite selfishly, to just spend uninterrupted time with the people I want to. And we don't hang out nearly as much as we should, and it's been a treat.
It's been so nice to have one thing to do.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, because
single focus,
no phone, like no, just to be able to go, this is our job, and it's making me makes me a little bit anxious because I keep thinking I'm meant to be doing something.
Yeah,
but it's been really nice to just
don't let anxiety be the driver. We've learned this.
It's been really nice to just be present and have a lekker KO with you.
Yeah, lekker, man. And yeah, and so you guys have got Inside Out 2.
Thank you. Yeah.
That you've rented. You both have kids that are the prime age to really enjoy this movie.
Yeah, can't wait.
And it's lovely. Thank you, guys.
Lekker, nice to see you.
Okay.
All right.
Lekker.
All the best.
Bye.
Bye.
Lekker. Thank you.
All right, what a lovely chat. We're not going to chat for too much longer because it was a bit of a longy.
Yeah.
But,
It
was a longy. But thanks for
what she said, yeah.
Both in length and girth.
It was a longy girthy.
Oh, gosh. All right, stop describing.
Sorry.
Stop describing cocks.
Jesus. Okay, that's
spiraled. So you've been drinking too much.
Yeah, this is what happens when you drink Twist wine on the
spiraled.
Job.
Yeah. That's spiraled. All right, guys, go take some Myprodol, drink some water, and let's have you back soon. But as mentioned, we're going to just take a break next week. So there won't be episodes next week, but then we will be back in action real soon.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys, have a lack of time.
Yeah,
you too, man.
All right.
Enjoy Amsterdam.
Yeah, you know? Oh, thanks.
How they speak in Amsterdam?
Well,
also
one of my trips to Amsterdam was with these Americans. Well, I went on my own. I was on an exchange program in Finland, and I went to Amsterdam for the weekend just to go watch Foo Fighters.
Oh,
funny
okay.
enough, a similar pilgrimage to this trip's going to be. And I was in this kind of hostel room with these other Americans.
Yeah.
And they seemed like nice people. And then once we hit the streets,
oh.
I realized their only Dutch reference was Austin Powers' Gold member.
Oh.
And so when they loudly announced, "I love gold," I was like, "All right, I'm going to see you guys later."
I'm out of here.
That's the equivalent of people just going, "My wife, we were king of the castle, king of the castle."
Well, Kazakhstan has finally embraced Borat.
Yeah,
they dismissed him for years.
Yeah.
And eventually they were like, "Actually, we can't fight this anymore. Yeah. We actually have to embrace it." So then they took him on as a bit of a...
like an ambassador.
An ambassador.
Yeah.
But they raged against them for so long, which they should have.
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
Yes, yeah.
But we'll get into that another time.
Yeah. Lekker, guys. All right. Thanks for a lovely day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Cheers.